Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, brought to you by the Desai Group. The Desai Group, getting the real work of innovation done. Visit them on the web at desai.com, D-E-S-A-I.com. The High Velocity Radio Show is where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Produced and directed by Lee Cantor and brought to you live from the Radio X studio in Atlanta, Georgia. Now here's your host, Stone Payton.
Welcome to the show, everybody. This is Stone Payton, your host for the High Velocity Radio Show. And joining me in the studio this morning is our producer and my co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Stone. How was your spring break? You had a big trip?
We did have a big trip. We had a great deal of fun, and we just rolled in at 4 o'clock this morning, so I'll try to keep the eyes open.
Just rolled right into the studio, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't have any trouble at all telling my own kids no. I can do that without blinking an eye, but their cousins, my brother's kids, were there, and they're from Tallahassee. And so rather than leave in the afternoon like we normally would yesterday after our Easter dinner, they wanted to stay and watch that two-hour special, that Extreme Makeover special.
Right.
And I couldn't tell them no, so we left Pensacola, I don't know, about 9 or 10 o'clock and rolled in early this morning.
So did you sleep or you just stayed up?
No, I'm going to do that after I get back home.
Nice plan.
But we didn't want to miss this morning's show. I have been so excited to bring this gentleman to the listening audience. The gentleman's name is Mike Brown, and I'll let him give you a little bit of a backstory in a moment about how we even got an opportunity to meet each other. But one of the reasons that I've been so excited about bringing this gentleman on the show, you know, Lee, we try to balance the show with a mix of thought leaders, speakers, consultants, authors that are in the innovation space.
Right. As well as people in the trenches.
Yeah, and we also like to have people in the trenches that are neck deep, you know, really getting the real work of innovation done. And this gentleman brings both to us.
So are you saying he's going to replace you as the host of the show?
Yeah, probably. He will if you hear him. Well, please welcome to the show, Mike Brown. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you, Stone. Lee, I appreciate that.
Well,
I think your job's secure, Stone. Don't worry about it.
Well, we are delighted to have you on the show. And maybe that is a good place to start. Why don't you give our listeners a little bit of background about how you and I just even came to know each other?
Well, it was earlier this year. I'd signed up for Twitter, which I think you've talked about on your show before. I know Todd talked about it a number of weeks ago. Signed up for it a couple of years ago, and it just never made sense to me why anybody would go out there and put, you know, that they were going to the grocery store or something. But around the first of the year, I thought, well, I see people are using it to build blogs and do other things, so I thought I'd give it a try. And one Saturday night, I saw this tweet from a guy named @StonePayton that said he was doing a contest to define innovation in 140 characters or less. And there was a prize associated with it, which got my attention, but I thought, that's a pretty neat idea to be able to get input from a lot of people. I thought, I'll probably steal that idea. And then all of a sudden, Stone said, well, I'd give $1,000 for it. And it's like, well, he just priced all the thieves out of the market. So I sent him a tweet, and that led to some email conversation and participated in the contest, and we've been on the phone. So another proof point of social media can lead to kind of escalating relationships and get to know people that you probably never would have without it. So
you never had met before. Had you met anybody else, you know, a complete stranger via the internet in this manner before?
I think Stone was probably one of the first people that I actually talked to. I've subsequently met some people, a photographer, where I was doing some speaking and had him do some photos for me. But I think Stone was probably the first person I had talked to on the phone coming out of a meeting somebody via Twitter.
And did you have an issue with, like, trust since you didn't know anybody? Because that's something that I hear a lot, that, you know, there's an old New Yorker cartoon that says on the internet nobody knows you're a dog, and it shows a dog typing on the internet. So did you have any trust issues with that, or you were able to kind of look at his background and you saw that he was for real?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great point, Lee. The fact that he had a blog and a website, I had the same. And then we actually looked on LinkedIn, and we knew an individual named Chuck Dimer who Stone had met a number of years ago, and I've known probably 15 years. So there was at least enough commonality and enough kind of sharing of information there that, no, there was no trust issues at all.
You know, in a lot of ways, you know, and Todd Schnick mentioned this on the show a couple of weeks ago, I think. In a lot of ways, operating in that virtual environment is not unlike being at a cocktail party or a fundraiser or a networking meeting. It's amazing how small the world really is in some ways, and how many connections you really have if you get a chance to start talking a little bit.
That's a really interesting point, because the characterizing particularly Twitter as kind of a cocktail party, I think, is really appropriate. I was describing it to somebody the other day that depending upon how you cultivate the piece or the group of people you interact with, I've tried to follow people who are focused on innovation and creativity and strategy. So it's like this international cocktail party with people who have the same interests but bring all kinds of points of view to it. So it's for me, I think it has led to just a lot of really interesting kind of interactions like that, and an opportunity to meet people internationally, even to film a little YouTube video that led off an innovation event in Sydney, Australia, which never would have happened absent something like Twitter. So it's, for me, it's created great opportunities, you know, within 4 months.
Right. Now, I think that it's better than a cocktail party in the sense that you're just a couple of clicks away to verify that Stone was legitimate, whereas at a cocktail party you'd have to sit there the whole evening and kind of ascertain based on conversation.
Point to the guy over the corner. Have you talked to that guy?
Do you know this guy? Who is he?
Yeah.
It's my crazy neighbor that I invite to all these cocktail parties.
Well, and you brought something up that has been a tremendous value to me through all of these different social media outlets, and that's access to information and other thought leadership. Because, as an example, your blog, Brain Zooming blog, you know, that's one of the places that I make sure that people who visit my blog know how to get to that. It's a blog that I will often cite, and I will go and read your blog, and there are others. Tell us a little bit about your blog and what prompted you to get that started and what kind of focus you try to take with that.
Yeah, the Brain Zooming blog actually came about probably a little over a year and a half ago. I'd gone to a presentation, an IABC meeting, the International Association of Business Communicators meeting, and somebody was doing a session on blogs, and she said, you know what, you can get started with a blog in 10 minutes for free. And a couple weeks later, I wanted to start to do some writing on strategic thinking, and I've also got a department that's kind of spread out, you know, around the country. So I was just looking for ways to start to share information. And I thought, well, I'll take her up on this. And sure enough, I could set it up for free and I could do it in 10 minutes. And I emailed one of my friends here, one of my creative instigation partners. And I said, you know, Jan, you should try a blog. And she said, well, I'm really busy. I can't do it. By Monday, she had a daily blog started. And that sort of got me to actually do it on a daily basis as well. So it's been a fun thing to just share new ideas or share things that I come across, you know, that are on other blogs, like you said, Stone, you know, link out to other blogs, other people who are doing work in innovation, or sometimes just take some incidents in life and, you know, maybe do a little bit of generalization to it, but try and get it in a form that it's shareable and there's some kind of a lesson or learning that others could grab from that as well.
Can you talk a little bit about creative instigation? What is that a phrase that you coined, or can you talk about that?
Yeah, it's actually, and the other person I was talking about was Jan Harness. She's a writer that I work with, and she needed a title. She has her own firm and needed a title for a presentation that we were submitting to a conference, and she was struggling. She said, I'd like to have something with a C-level, and I came up with Chief Creative Instigator, because I told her, I said, that's what you do. You instigate creativity. So when she started her blog, she called it Creative Instigation, and so it's interesting. It's kind of a shared brand between us. It's her title. It's her blog. But we share some of the same kind of philosophy of really the fact that everybody is creative in their own ways. You know, we just tend to get taught by authority figures and society and people around us to shut a lot of that down over time. But that you can really instigate that creativity and you can apply it in a lot of portions of your life. So we've tried to take some of the work from each of our blogs, and you know, we're working on a book called Creative Instigation that sort of brings this whole thing to light, that, you know what, you can really go back and tap into some of your special talents, things that really excite you, and bring those into your personal life and your work life, and not only probably improve your own outlook, but those of the people around you as well.
Well, one of the things that I like so much about your Brain Zooming blog, and I'm sure I'll find the same thing in following Jan's blog, which I haven't done, candidly, but I'll certainly start. But one of the things that I really like is you bring a real-world perspective to a topic, innovation, that can very quickly become, you know, an intellectual exercise and an academic topic. And that's one of the things that I really enjoy about your blog. And I get the sense that the organization you work for, because you're a vice president inside a transportation and logistics organization, so you have a real job as the rest of us speaker-author types. So you must really enjoy a culture and environment there that gives you that latitude to express yourself and continue to learn and grow in this space.
It's a really good point, Stone, and it has. And it's interesting. Sometimes there's more of that latitude, sometimes there's less of that latitude, because, again, it isn't a full-time career thing or an independent kind of effort. It needs to fit and adapt and work in and support what I do, you know, during most of my time. And
it's
a company that's grown. It's YRC Worldwide. We've grown tremendously through acquisitions over the last number of years. And in doing that, it gave me an opportunity to work with folks in other businesses that we had acquired and really kind of grow a style that almost by nature had to be very flexible and very adaptive and very relationship building in orientation, because we didn't want to come in and go, well, we bought you, here's how you're going to do things. Our attitude was, we want to build on the strengths and the expertise that, you know, resides within the companies we purchased. So really putting together from some of Edward de Bono's lateral thinking techniques and facilitation skills that came from my research background and a little bit of improv comedy, because, you know, people don't necessarily like to do strategic thinking. It's got to be fun. And even some of the self-help TV shows where they kind of help people through a process and help teach them as they go, put together a planning and innovation style that basically we have to go sell into these companies. They're not required to use us. So it has been a tremendously encouraging atmosphere in that regard, to be able to go learn things, go interact with new people like you, new information sources, but bring it right back to help our business. So it's been really enjoyable that way.
Now, how are you in the industry, in the transportation and logistics industry? Are you kind of an anomaly, or are other people in the industry embracing Twitter and blogging and things like that?
I think other people are embracing it. There's a group called the Transportation Marketing Communications Association that is starting to get into blogging. And Tom Nightingale, who's the chief marketing officer at one of our competitors, Conway, he actually was on a marketing profs online conference here a couple of weeks ago, and Tom's been very active in some of these areas as well. So I think there's pockets within transportation and logistics. I think the thing that I've found in some of looking at some third-party studies, not necessarily a lot of our decision makers have gravitated that way. They're very busy. They're under a lot of pressures, and I think for them it's much more, how am I conducting business electronically? I think, you know, over time that may gravitate as some younger people come into the workforce within transportation and logistics. But it's probably not the hotbed of Twitter use as an industry right now.
Now, what about in innovation in general?
I think you see pockets of it again. I always tell people at the start of a lot of the presentations, I said, I don't work in a design firm. I don't work in the hot new ad agency. So, you know, we look at innovation as, you know, I guess as you characterize, kind of in the trenches, that it's got to work within the business. And typically in transportation and logistics, there's a lot of operational structure in place that you have to innovate within that. And I think that's in contrast. I was at a conference last fall and sat in on a number of sessions where it was much more of a consumer packaged goods background. And I got into a conversation with one of the facilitators after her session, where she had said, you know, you want to have creative people in here. You never want to have engineers because, you know, they just don't get it and they come at it from a different perspective. And I said, that's interesting, because I said, we find the best strategic thinking, even really the best creative thinking, happens when you've got people who have real frontline experience. They're in sales or in operations or in customer service. They know what's going on in the business. You have people that have some functional knowledge that's relevant to the issues that you're trying to address or the opportunities you're trying to capitalize on. And you've got some people that bring the creative spark to it. And we look at those three groups and try and make sure we've got somebody or a group of people from each one. And typically the creatives are maybe 10 to 20% of the group. You want to have people who've got the real life understanding and knowledge in place. So,
right. I agree. I think that that's right on the money. I think that's where a lot of the innovation kind of falls out, is that they get too bogged down on the creative element of it.
Right.
And it's not where the rubber hits the road element. And by having that kind of big, diverse group in there, they're able to kind of, you know, say, oh, no, that, you know, they can get rid of bad ideas quickly because they know just what's not going to work just at a glance. Whereas a creative person can go off onto this tangent because in some pie in the sky, you know, place, it's a great idea.
It's a challenge, Lee, because I think you still have to protect divergent thinking time and convergent thinking time.
Right.
So you want to do both. You want to expand the thinking, but also make sure you're prioritizing the things that can actually have a business impact.
Right. I agree. I think that's just innovative in itself. Now, who are the leaders in innovation out there in transportation? Who are the people you look up to?
Mike Brown.
Other than you, obviously. You and your company.
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly some of the biggest brands in transportation and logistics are FedEx and UPS. And, you know, I think they bring an interesting perspective to it because they have both a business dimension to what they do, but they also have a consumer dimension.
Right.
And we don't share that. We are primarily a business-to-business company. So, I mean, we've grown tremendously. You know, we're somewhere between around $9 billion. So a major force, but not necessarily a household name. Although we've started to make some progress in that direction. Actually, this weekend, we sponsor Jim Furyk, the golfer, is one of our sponsorship things that we do, and he was actually doing very well on the Masters. So we're trying to get that name out there more, but I think you almost see that across industries. If there's an industry that has both a business-to-business and a business-to-consumer component, some of the companies that have a foot in the consumer side maybe tend to be a little bit more on the cutting edge or a little bit more in terms of some of the branding work, just because I think that's where a lot of the expertise and the background has come from, the consumer side maybe more than business-to-business.
Mike, you mentioned a little bit earlier that you were collaborating on a book with Jan Harness, but you have an ebook out already entitled Taking the No Out of Innovation. What prompted you to write that book, and what's that all about?
It's a little ebook, and it's 18, 20 pages. And it came out of a presentation I started doing a number of years ago. Somebody asked me to come speak to a marketing communications class, and it was really one of the first times I talked about innovation. And was trying to get across the point, I didn't necessarily come even from necessarily an innovative background. I had a career coach one time who told me, and this is when I was doing strategic planning and marketing communications, he said, well, you're not, you know, I looked at your test results, you're not strategic and you're not creative. It's like, gosh, that's my job. And
have a nice day.
Yeah, I'm doing okay at it, but you know, thanks for your opinion. But taking the no out of innovation really came out of some of the no's that we hear to, well, you know, don't do that differently, or you know, don't break the rules, or don't handle that in a different kind of way. And said, from a personal standpoint, how do you start to get around that? How do you tap into a little bit more open perspective? Enhance, you know, maybe your own skills by attracting a creative team that complements what you do and your strengths, and you can complement their strengths. And a lot of it shares some of the things I've learned, you know, from Chuck Diamer that I mentioned before in lateral thinking techniques. So it was sort of a handbook for, again, within a big business that isn't always the most innovative, how do you start to create a little bit more of an innovative perspective and get around some of those no's that are put in place? So turned it into that ebook, and I've now started doing kind of a second version of that says more from a business standpoint, what are some of the no's, and particularly in today's economy, that get put out there that stand in the way of innovation and you know, people who want to kind of hunker down. So think of it a little bit more from a business standpoint as well. So it's been a nice little way to kind of extend that idea.
Well, I really enjoyed what I've read of it, and I know that you touch on 8 different perspectives and approaches, and you may choose to speak to all of them while we're visiting here today. But the one that sort of stood out for me, it took me by surprise a little bit. But one of the perspectives you talk about is forgetfulness. Can you help us understand that and how that plays in?
Well, I think the forgetful one comes back to the challenge of typically we advance in our careers and we get to where we are based on our knowledge and what we know about the business, the experience we've gained, you know, maybe having a pretty good handle on the conventional wisdom in what we do. And that makes us really strong, but the problem is it also becomes a bit of a barrier to think about things in new ways. So the question is, how do you selectively become forgetful? You know, I think in the book characterize it in the movie Men in Black, they used to have that little red light they'd flash in people that, you know, made them temporarily forget
things. Yeah.
And it's really, how do you use De Bono's lateral thinking techniques or other exercises to say, you know what, I'm going to suspend my conventional wisdom for a minute, think about this in a new way, and then come back and apply that. And it gets back to the point, you know, Lee was making before about how do I get a time of divergent thinking, but then use my background and the knowledge I have to then bring it to, you know, convergence, to prioritize and say, okay, from all these possibilities, here's the highest probability ones that we can advance.
Well, and this book strikes me as something that is truly a job aid, genuinely an application tool. I mean, you've gone in into each of these sections and provided, you know, I saw some exercises in there and some questions. It looks to me like you could actually take this this ebook and utilize it as a way to facilitate some meaningful conversation around generating new ideas, or I don't know, perhaps even conduct some sort of training workshop. How are leaders using this material?
It's very much intended in that way. When I do this presentation, and really anything I do, I always try and start with the approach of a lot of the stuff I found on my own or kind of happened our way into, but how would I turn around and teach it to somebody else, or how do I remember it in the future so that I don't have to relearn it? So really take that approach, try and give people handouts and tools and share these things to say, you know what? Yeah, you can go have somebody else help you to do this, but a lot of it you can make happen yourself. So, you know, with this ebook, I really try and make sure that the people are able to walk away and, as you said, start to apply it themselves. And maybe some of the things you do, maybe some of the things you don't do, but certainly even just the core idea of understanding what are your talents, what are the things that really excite you, and the fact those are probably going to be some very creative areas for you. How do you make decisions, or how do you tap that creativity and bring it into other venues? And then how do you go find like-minded people who, you know, I'm not a huge sports fan, so how do I tap into somebody who's a big sports fan and brings creativity from that perspective and have them on my team? That's how Jan and I found each other. She's very much concentrating on writing. It's something I do. It's not one of my greatest talents, but I can reach out to her, and she in turn can reach out to me. So I think everybody can take that idea and say, you know what, I'm a lot smarter if I've got a real smart little team built around that we're benefiting each other.
So collaboration is very important, especially in this day and age with the internet, and it enables you to collaborate with people all over the world now.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I always tell people I'm a lot smarter when I'm in a room of smart people than when I'm by myself, and it's just a great experience to have rewarding work and personal relationships where you know what, I can get together with that person and we can start throwing ideas around and great things will come from this. It's just a lot more fun and a lot more rewarding to have done it with somebody else than to try and do it on your own.
How do you marry that those thoughts with the kind of corporate mentality that a lot of people have where, you know, I'm always got to, you know, protect my ideas and that it's, and, you know, I got to, you know, show that I'm the smart guy, that I'm worthy of this position, and, you know, the people who try to kind of, have, you know, they're involved in the politics of, you know, the corporate life?
Boy, what a great question, because I've actually been here 18 years, so you learn how to adapt. You know, in working with people like that, a lot of times I love to plant great ideas with them and let them take credit for them. You know, I almost enjoy nothing more than an idea maybe that I had or we work with in the group and somebody else starts to take it on as their own idea, because that means they've really started to embrace it. And there's certainly a little bit of risk with, maybe a lot of risk with that approach, but I always tell the people I work with, you know what, I would sooner be known for the fact that, well, gosh, in a lot of these successes or a lot of these instances, I tended to see Mike involved with it somehow, even if I'm not the one in front or even if I'm not the one claiming ownership with the idea. I think Zig Ziglar said it about you can get everything you want in life by helping other people be successful. And I really, really, really try to live that out every day. So
you don't mind being the guy behind the guy?
Not at all. But, you know, and sometimes you get to be the guy in front, but I would just as soon have the people that I work with be out there and getting limelight. There's plenty enough of it to go around. It tends to be the way I look at it.
But, you know, that really is an important cultural footnote. I mean, you can bring all of the collaborative tools and resources and training and education you want to an organization, but if the leadership doesn't express, model, and reward this sense of collaboration, then, you know, sometimes those tools don't really get the job done. I know in some cultures it just individual contribution is so highly prized and so visibly rewarded that it can fly right in the face of trying to establish this more collaborative kind of culture.
That's true, but I think, again, it's sort of what you want to get out of it and how you want to contribute. You know, talk to a lot of people who are early on in their careers, and they say, well, I don't have an opportunity to be strategic, or, you know, how do I get my boss to embrace this stuff? They don't want to have 10 people in a room and do one of these sessions. And I always say, well, you know what? There's a lot of other ways to be strategic that you may never think of. One of them is, if you go to meetings, agree to go up to the whiteboard and start to capture notes or start to put ideas down. And I say, you know, you have to do it using the rules of good facilitation and not be biased. But in that way, you start to become the journalist and then ultimately the historian for that meeting. You're capturing the ideas. You get to shape them. You can present them back in a different kind of organizational fashion. I said, that's a way to be strategic. Another way that I've talked to people, I said, if you've got a boss who, well, I don't want to dedicate 8 or 10 people to go do this, go grab some people who are of a like mind and go do the thinking for them. You know, you don't have to spend hours to do innovative thinking. It may be 30 minutes or 45 minutes. Think about some ideas, call them down, and provide a recommendation to your boss. And that's another way to seed innovation without them having to really see what goes on in the background. Again, it comes back to how hard do you want to work at it, how do you want to contribute, and do you want to make a difference in your business? If you want to just get recognized, yeah, maybe that's not the right path for you, but if you want to try and affect the business in a positive way, there's all kinds of things you can do, even amid what could be characterized as a hostile environment to innovation.
Right, that could be your next ebook, is sneaking innovation into any culture.
Well, and it's funny, because that's this next version of it leaves a little bit of that to say, you know, if you're faced with, you know, we don't have resources, or, you know, we don't want to address anything that's, you know, if it's not broken, don't do anything with it. Here's some ways to start to make it happen. And, you know, I tell people, it's a little bit of, at times, a little bit of subterfuge. You know, if there's a resistance to creativity or innovation, don't call it that. Just bring the results to the table, because generally the results are going to help the business, and pretty much everybody wants to help their business grow.
Well, and I hear in that a strong undercurrent for this idea of personal accountability and taking personal responsibility for generating corporate results.
Absolutely.
And I love the way that you wrap up this list of 8 perspectives. The last one on the list is persistent, and you define it as tenaciously pursuing possibilities.
Yeah, and again, that maybe is shaped by my career path, where I've been in one place, but it's been a company that's has changed dramatically. So I've gotten that sense of change that I really like and new challenges. But I've also enjoyed a tremendous advantage from kind of a lot of intellectual capital over time and to be able to see the long lines of the business and realize, you know what, here's something that might be a really good idea, but its time isn't right now. But, you know, 2 years later or 3 years later, be able to reintroduce that idea when maybe, you know, something in the business has changed or the environment has changed, and be able to bring it to the table and people go, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's do that. So, you know, I don't know that I'd advocate it as a career path for everybody, but I've certainly tried to mine the advantages of it. And that long line approach to the business is one that has yielded some real positives.
Well, we're certainly all richer for your efforts. So how can our listeners get in touch with you and get access to this ebook and get to your blog and that kind of thing?
Probably the blog is brainzooming.blogspot.com. I've got to get it over to its own URL, but it's at brainzooming.blogspot.com. And there's a link out there. My email is mike@mikebrownspeaks.com. And what I'll do, Stone, just to make it easier for folks, I will go out there tonight and put a post out that's got the link to the ebook out on SlideShare. It's out there, and that way everybody, if they want to, can go out and grab it and some of the other resources that we've talked about.
Oh, terrific. And we'll get a link up on the High Velocity Radio Show website as well.
Cool.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show. We're about out of time, but before we let you go, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show, Mike, where we ask each guest, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made somewhere in their career, and really, more importantly, what they've learned from it. Could we con you into doing that for us?
Absolutely. In my first job at Kansas City Infobank, it was a small little research company. I'd been there a couple of months, and I'd come out of business school, and I was working on a report about an add-on for a laser printer. And I was so used to writing, as you have to do in school, where you've got to trot out all these facts and all this information to help people understand that you have a command of the knowledge so that you can get a good grade. So I was off in, you know, and in trying to predict laser printer usage or penetration, I was off into computer numbers and what are mice and how is that going to affect all this. And my boss sat me down and said, look, you're not writing for school anymore. You're writing for business. The fact that we have this project, there's a presumption we know what we're talking about, that we're qualified to do this. That's not what you're doing, is not what business readers or business decision makers want to see. They want to understand what's the point and what do they do about it. And I can see that day and that moment as clearly as anything, because it changed my writing style of think about the audience, think about what their decisions are, think about how you can contribute to those decisions. And Bill McDonald was the guy I work for, and I still consider him one of my strategic mentors. But that lesson, or that mistake in going down the wrong path of writing, has been a tremendous one that I've tried to make sure I always follow and share with people I've worked with as well. So that's probably the business mistake I go back to right at the heart that has changed me a lot.
Well, based on what I've been reading in your blogs and in your ebook, I'd say you've certainly recovered from that mistake in spades and really profited from it. That's tremendous advice to really know your audience and speak to that constituency. Well, we have absolutely enjoyed having you on the show, Mike, and I hope you'll come back sometime.
Stone and Lee, I would love to come back. I really appreciate the opportunity to spend some time with you all.
You are more than welcome, and we'll see you on Twitter.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Until next week, this is Stone Payton, Mike Brown, Lee Cantor, and everybody at the Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.